usually what we do is we go through and we read through the whole text, you know, just the verses. Since we have people in the back, I'll just read them myself. We usually go around, it's more interesting that way. Try not to team you say we won't be able to do it here. Here the third or fourth verse. So I'll just read them myself. Okay. So most confidential knowledge, this text, this chapter has, it's pretty long. 34 verses, I think. 34 verses. So the first section is the first three verses, the first three verses where Krishna describes, tells him that he's going to describe this most confidential knowledge. Text 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." Text 2. "This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed." "Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world." Then, from 4 to 10, there's a description. This is part of the most confidential knowledge, where Krishna describes his mystical opulence, how he both expands and enters into the creation and yet remains aloof at the same time. So this is 4 through 10. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. 5. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself, capital S, is the very source of creation. 6. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. 7. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. 8. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. 9. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. 10. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Now we change the subject. And Krishna explains that his supremacy is denied by some people, fools, he calls them. 11 and 12, 11. Fools deride me, Mudha, we know that verse from earlier. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme Lord of all mankind. those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. And that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Now, 13 and 14 describes the opposite, the great souls. O son of Britta, those who are not deluded, the great souls, Mahatma, another word we've already encountered, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Now, from 15 through 19, Krishna turns to the discussion of the his impersonal feature and the Mayavadis who are attracted to that. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sam, and the Yajur Vedas. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal city. O Arjuna, I give heat, and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are me. Then from 20 to 25, Krishna again discusses the worshippers of other gods, demigods, and contrasts that with worshippers of him. He says, 20. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods, and who worship them with faith, actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in the wrong way. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my transcendental nature, my true transcendental nature, fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings, and those who worship me will live with me. Then 26 to the end of the chapter, Krishna describes the process of worshiping him, bhakti yoga, and the protection that he gives to those who pursue that path. 26. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. In this way, you will be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed in me, in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated. Come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I also am a friend to him. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. O son of Pitta, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, and Shudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmanas, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary, miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. That's the end of the chapter. That's chapter 9. So we just go back now again to text number 1. Page 447. We have it. In Sanskrit. Sri Bhagavan Vacha,
Sri Bhagavan Vacha,
Idam tu te
kuyatamam, Idam tu te kuyatamam,
Ravakshyam yamasuyave,
Ravakshyam yamasuyave,
Gyanam vijnana sahitam,
Gyanam vijnana sahitam,
Yashnatva moksha moksha shu. Yajnatva moksha se shubha.
Yajnatva moksha se shubha.
So he, Bhagavan, Vacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Idam this tu bhatte unto you, Purushottama, the most confidential, Pravakshami, I am speaking. Ansuyave, to the non-envious, Gyanam, knowledge, Vijnanam, realized knowledge, Sahitam, with yet which jnatva, knowing moksha, say you will be released, ashubha, from this miserable material existence. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Let's read it together.
The Supreme Personality of God has said, my dear Arjuna, because you are envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of
a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies. The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized. The topics regarding the Supreme Lord are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, or it is realized knowledge. I know which verse it is. Shrimadana Sakadam Krishna Munyasra Kirtana. Huh? What do you think? Hmm? Different verse. You don't think this is this verse?
The name doesn't pick up.
No, it doesn't. Well, that's where it talks about potencies are realized. Shrimadana Sakadam. Doesn't mention in the association of devotees in that verse. Well, that could be. Once you say the only in the association of devotees, then it's automatically understood. Academic scholars.
Christian within the heart.
Yes.
Devotees who have deep desires. And the devotees who can hear the messengers.
Right. I think it's in that section. Anyway, wherever it's from. Let me just comment on this. Prabhupada is saying here that he stresses on hearing. He's saying, Prabhupada, I'm speaking this to you. So Prabhupada says this hearing process is recommended. Oh, he talks about why, the point I want to make, Jnana Vijnana is in this verse. You notice that there is Jnana Vijnana Masahita. Knowledge along with realizing knowledge. Knowledge and realization. Confidential knowledge and realization. So that's the point of saying that the realization will not take place unless one hears properly from the right source and in the company of devotees. One has to hear from a devotee, then there'll be realization. Realization means direct perception of those things which are described. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That topic is put forward in the devotees of the topic of realization and for academic debate. In academic circles, I know people who become fully convinced, say on the basis of the ontological argument that there was a God, and it made absolutely no difference whatsoever in their lives. That it was just practical. So there's no realization. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand science of Krishna in the association of devotees. Discussion with Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes in this ninth chapter matters more confidential than any he has already discussed. So we'll get a breakdown of this about what's confidential and more confidential and most confidential. Now notice this, how one makes advancement in Krishna consciousness. At every step of the way, it always depends on the mercy of Krishna. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's and service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness. So there he is, super soul, always the factor in every action, and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in association with devotees. So it's always by the pleasure of Krishna that we make advancement. It's like, it's also, how are we able to make advancement by pleasing the spiritual master? Well, if the spiritual master becomes pleased, then Krishna becomes pleased, and it's Krishna who bestows by the same method advancement upon the devotee. That's how it works. It's not that the spiritual master has the power on his own to give anybody advancement in Krishna consciousness. No, he can only become pleased and says, Krishna, please give this person advancement. And Krishna reciprocates like that. That's how it works. And so the Lord is always the major factor here. That shouldn't be discussed. That shouldn't be forgotten. So Prabhupada says discussion of Krishna is very potent in the association of devotees. That one is sincere and serious in that association, they'll make advancement. So there's the process to describe how this hearing is to take place so that there can be jnana and vijnana.
Yeah, okay. You have proper balance of say, discussion amongst associated devotees and amongst personal study of science, Krishna consciousness. Here, Prabhupada was discussing that it's communicated in association of other devotees. It's discussed, but I mean, also stressed how we should all be reading individually, studying on your own.
A balance between discussion and individual reading? Well, yes, why not? Then if you've read things, then you can make more of a contribution to the discussion. Otherwise, if you haven't read anything, then you have to keep your mouth shut and just listen. But if you're reading, then you can also contribute something like that. It would be strange if one were reading and not discussing. Of course, reading Prabhupada books, that also amounts sometimes to kind of hearing in the association of devotees. That's another way to say to associate with Srila Prabhupada is by reading also. But the important thing is to take advantage. The reason for living together in the temple and with devotees is to have the opportunity to discuss Krishna consciousness with the devotees. And there's three kinds of discussions that usually go on. There's total maya, things not relevant to Krishna consciousness. There's discussion about service, which is quite legitimate, and is also devotional service. But then there's actual discussion about Krishna, his philosophy, his pastimes. And this third kind has to be encouraged. If we're not on a spontaneous platform, we sometimes seem like an official things we really discuss, but actually the potency will be there. And naturally, it also is what we're thinking about. And if we're reading, as one of our sutra points out, if we're reading a lot, then that's what will be on our mind and what we'll also be discussing. So now let's go on. That's been the jnana and vijnana, realization described here, how this comes about. Now he talks about now this guhyatama, most confidential knowledge. The very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, is more or less an introduction to the rest of the book. And in the second and third chapters, spiritual knowledge described is called confidential. Topics discussed in the seventh and eighth chapters are specifically related to devotional service, and because they bring enlightenment in Krishna consciousness, they are called more confidential. But matters which are described in the ninth chapter deal with unalloyed, pure devotion. Therefore, this is called the most confidential. One who is situated in the most confidential knowledge of Krishna is naturally transcendental. He therefore has no material pangs, although he is in the material world. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is said that although one who has a sincere desire to render loving service to the Supreme Lord is situated in a conditional state of material existence, he is to be considered liberated. Similarly, we shall find in the Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter that anyone who is engaged in that way is a liberated person. Okay. So, the first chapter, second and third chapter is confidential. What is discussed in the second and third chapter? Who remembers that far back? Was it last year sometime? 2 years ago? We're on a snail's pace here. What's discussed in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita?
The souls.
Yeah, first thing, that difference between matter and spirit, and what else? And buddhi yoga, which means what? Does anybody remember? Buddhi yoga. What is it? Yeah, and some other things too.
I couldn't know what you just said.
Buddhi yoga, buddhi. Buddhi yoga is described in the second chapter. It means acting in Krishna consciousness or acting without attachments to the results of the work. Fixing your intelligence on Krishna. So this is very basic, that you are not this body and out of work without attachments to the results. And in those chapters, actual devotional service is hinted at. You can see this especially if you look at the Sanskrit. Because Prabhupada in his purports will spell out all the implications of what's going to be said later on in the Bhagavad Gita. It looks, you know, see the contrast, but actually the Bhagavad Gita doesn't speak a lot about devotional service in the second and third chapter. It talks about giving up the results of your work. And Prabhupada's purport says that he needs to give up the results of your work to Krishna. So on, and that's what's being implied, but it is implied. The third chapter is called Karma Yoga, that's what it's about, giving up the results of your work, about sacrifice, about controlling the senses. So kind of very basic, fundamental knowledge of spiritual life. Then, in the seventh and eighth chapters, he said, topics specifically related to devotional service, and because they bring enlightenment, they're considered, in devotional service, they're considered to be more confidential. So there was a lot in knowledge of the Absolute. It goes back to Godhead. Directly discusses surrender to Krishna, directly discusses worship of Krishna as contrasted to the worship of the demigods. And then also in the eighth chapter, which is sort of a continuation of the seventh, he answers the questions of Arjuna and discusses about the difference of what is attained by worshipping Krishna and leaving, thinking of Krishna and leaving your body at that time, the time of death, the discussion between how you go and don't reach other and how you go and come back. That's all about attaining the goal of Krishna. So in this chapter, we're going to see the most confidential knowledge, because here we deal more directly with pure devotional service.
Look at chapter 6, Krishna says, Yada, Janabuti, this knowledge, best knowledge of the knowledge. We put it, for instance, knowledge explained in this chapter is preferred by the Supreme Lord, the spirit of knowledge given so far in other chapters.
So it's confidential, more confidential, most confidential, and highest.
So, but it seems like it's the same knowledge, actually. It says, by understanding this knowledge, various great sages to perfection and transfer to the spiritual world, the Lord now explains the same knowledge in that way.
Yeah, that's the Vedic way. This period depends on how much you want to get into it. In other words, even if you understand the second chapter, Prabhupada said that even if you understand one verse of Bhagavad Gita thoroughly, you can get back to Godhead. So it's a question of understanding, not the depth of understanding. At any rate, this is called just accepted, most confidential knowledge. Later on, we'll find out even more about it. Remember, this is only a 9th chapter, we've got a long ways to go. You can see now how what happens the way the Bhagavad Gita works. Krishna goes over the same topics again and again, but each time a little deeper, a little deeper. It's amazing what's accomplished in almost 700 verses.
I was thinking this chapter seems like the same pattern in chapter 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pattern is pretty close. And remember that chapters 6 through 12 is the essence of Bhagavad Gita, and protected by the first 6 and the last 6 chapters. There's that too. Then Prabhupada describes here in this interesting statement about describing how he says you will be released from the pangs of material existence by understanding this most confidential knowledge. Prabhupada explains, one who is situated in this most confidential knowledge of Krishna is naturally transcendental. Therefore, he therefore has no material pangs. Although he's in the material world, and then he describes from the Bhaktivasamrita Sindhu, it is said that although one who has a sincere desire to render loving service to the Supreme Lord is situated in the conditional stage of material existence, he is to be considered liberated. Similarly, we shall find in the Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter that anyone who is engaged in that way is a liberated person. What does this mean? This means that anyone who's actually following the practice of devotional service, although that person may still be a conditioned soul, that is, may still be sometimes pushed by the modes of material nature, that person is strictly following, you know, that person's actions are liberated. And he is to be considered a liberated soul.
Strictly following in terms of what? Every activity?
Yeah, very, you have to be pretty strict. Well, I think it means more than that.
Well, it says engaged in activities and mind.
So, yeah, body, mind. Well, should be actually taking the process of devotional service. That is, a person should be trying to be thinking and engaged in Krishna service 24 hours a day. Not part-time devotional service.
What does it mean then? It says that he's still being pushed by the modes of nature, but he seems to be transcendent in the sense of
He's not getting into them. So,
well,
even if you're a devotee, will feel, you know, the bombardment somewhat, but he isn't.
No, it means that a person may be subjected to various temptations and may mentally give way somewhat, but it never reaches the stage of following actions, of changing one's activities. So this means that one is not yet spontaneously attracted. You have to control the mind. You may not be spontaneous attraction to Krishna service, but still, working there like that. You can't tell the difference in the person's behavior when one is spontaneously attracted, or almost can't tell the difference. Okay, let's keep reading. Now, this first verse has specific significance. The words, idam jnanam, this knowledge, refer to pure devotional service, which consists of nine different activities: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything. By the practice of these nine elements of devotional service, one is elevated to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When one's heart is thus cleared of material contamination, one can understand the signs of Krishna. Simply to understand that a living entity is not material is not sufficient. That may be the beginning of spiritual realization. But one should recognize the difference between activities of the body and the spiritual activities of one who understands that he is not the body. In the seventh chapter, we have already discussed the opulent potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different energies, the inferior and superior natures, and all of this material manifestation. Now in chapter 9, the glories of the Lord will be delineated. The Sanskrit word anasuyave in this verse is also very significant. Generally, the commentators, even if they are highly scholarly, are all envious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the most erudite scholars write on the Bhagavad Gita very inaccurately. Because they are envious of Krishna, their commentaries are useless. The commentaries given by devotees of the Lord are bona fide. No one can explain the Bhagavad Gita or give perfect knowledge of Krishna if he is envious. One who criticizes the character of Krishna without knowing him is a fool. So such commentaries should be very carefully avoided. For one who understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the pure and transcendental personality, these chapters will be very beneficial. But there he is. This is why some scholars are upset with him. No, it really irritates some people, especially at the University of Chicago. Anasuyave, because you are not envious to the non-envious in speaking this knowledge, so it can't be understood. And what does Prabhupada mean by envious? That you don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it's useless.
But there must be some benefit scholarly.
No touch by the lips of a serpent has a poisonous effect. Actually, it's worse for you because you actually hear blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am shocked and astonished that so many devotees are making plans to go see the Mahabharata in New York by Peter Brooks. Is that his name? Brooks. Yes. It's supposed to be a gorgeous production and all so many things along. It's the Mahabharata. New York City says they sent out an ad to the temples to post, see the Mahabharata company of the devotees, special group prices and everything like that. I just read a review of Mahabharata in Newsweek magazine. Of course, it makes you really want to go see it. And the clincher is the central figure of Krishna. How does it say about ambiguously torn between being a god and a man or something like that? Yeah, but somehow or other we're being ambiguously divided between humanity and divinity or something like that. And you just, you know, just what you need. Anasuya, so there's no, it isn't put together by devotees, it isn't acted by devotees. It isn't, you know, those people who are not devotees maybe don't have some more appreciation for Bhagavad Gita because it's part of the Mahabharata. Now they will have heard of it, especially if it becomes a TV series, but it's not of any spiritual use. In fact, it may be just the opposite. It's the same as all these commentaries on Bhagavad Gita by envious people. And actually, it's better off if you don't.
Some of these other translations that I wrote down on the Bible also contaminated.
Yeah. Very hard to. So they don't recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God, even though it's proclaimed over and over and over and over again. But usually by using Mayavadi philosophy, they manage to discount all those statements. They get a verse right out of here, they love. Yeah, this is for the women, the shudras, and the merchants. Well, fellows, blah, 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 everybody would call you with a shudra, including you. Prabhupada gives it to them there. So there won't be, the effect will not be there. One can read the Bhagavad Gita. Liberating potency, knowing which you shall be liberated from this material, miserable condition, that will not take place. In other words, for the text of the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes scholars are fond of this text and context. And if I were still a mental speculator, I would probably, and I wanted to spend the time on this, I could probably come up with a kind of a theory to explain how the text of the Bhagavad Gita doesn't occur until the context is there. In other words, this book taken and read in a classroom by a professor from the University of Chicago, by students who have enrolled or paying their fees, is not, they're not studying the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, in order to study the Bhagavad Gita, you have to have a bona fide spiritual master, you have to have bona fide students. Then you have the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, the Bhagavad Gita is something that takes place in certain relationships. It's not that's not a thing.
It's not like a material science you can study.
No, it's just all these things have to be there. Like there's an analogy for the potency to be there. Here's an analogy. Take the English sentence, I pronounce you man and wife, husband and wife. I pronounce you husband and wife. I can say that sentence to some man or some woman. I've said the sentence. But if I am duly authorized by the state of Pennsylvania and maybe husband or man and woman in front of me have a valid marriage license, that utterance does something. I'm not just saying it, it marries them. Or if I say to somebody, I sentence you to 10 years in jail, if that utterance comes off in the right circumstances, that is to say, here's a person guilty of a crime, I'm the judge, you know, duly appointed or elected by the state, I'm in the court's in session, and I say that he is sentenced to 10 years in jail. something happens. So there's a special kind of utterance called performative utterances. A philosopher thought about their existence of. But in a similar sort of way, you don't get the realized knowledge of Bhagavad Gita unless unless the right circumstances are there. And then, because what is it? Is it the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita? If you're not hearing it from the right person, if you're not qualified by approaching in the right way, what are they studying? They're studying, it's like Maya, Bhagavad Gita, like Maya Sita. When Ravana stole Sita, he didn't get Sita, he got Maya Sita, because separated from Ramachandra, it's Maya. Krishna's energy separated from Krishna, it's Maya. So similarly, when we take the Bhagavad Gita itself and separate it from Krishna, what is it? It's not the Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So therefore, he said,
respecting its historical context.
In other words, to him, this Bhagavad Gita is a fossil. It's a fly in amber, something that is produced at a certain point in history. And that to understand it is actually his translation is not well received at all. And because he had a certain theory about what was going on in Indian history at that time with the Bhagavad Gita. But he actually, because Prabhupada translates Bhavaka as electricity, because he has no sense of the historical continuity, he sees the Bhagavad Gita as essentially dead. Whereas the whole point of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita is this is a living text. There's a living spiritual master, the living disciples, and enlightened knowledge is going on. It's not something that happened in whatever they think 2,000 years ago under some certain circumstances. Isn't it interesting to see that? Any other questions? Comments? Yes. No, this guy's at the university somewhere in the West Coast. His name is Bol, B-O-L-L-E. It's just that whole approach. Nobody in particular at the University of Chicago. Just the whole approach. Sometimes. I mean, Van Williams there, he did a whole translating Mahabharata. You kind of do the Gita too. Oh, wherever. I don't know, it seems like University of Chicago is.
Are there other scholars who try and take apart Prabhupada's Gita and nitpick?
There are some. There are some. I know about three. I know another guy who's this Keyes Bold, and another guy. I can't remember the book now. I have it somewhere. We really, really. It's in the context of modern Hinduism. He's writing about modern Hinduism, and he writes about it in America. And he really, really gets on the Prabhupada. I can't remember. I suppress this stuff. Since I wasn't in a position to do anything about it. And another person who's usually pretty favorable, he wrote something. He didn't think it was bad, I guess from the police point of view. That's a little wrangling. But he finds all these statements where Prabhupada says there's things about academic scholars, and he just pulls them out. Quotes. It's there, you just say. But Prabhupada is not always, he's been pretty rough on scholars sometimes. I know one scholar who's very favorable toward the movement of Krishna consciousness, but he still rankles him in his heart. At that time he was a graduate student at the Center for the Study of World Religions at Harvard, and Prabhupada came to Harvard. Gave a lecture or two, and they took them around, and they sat down in a lounge, and they had like a chat. And finally, some of them said, this is typical, they thanked him very much and told him how much they appreciated learning from him, hearing from him, what they gained. And then they asked him whether he had learned or gained anything from them. Prabhupada said, no. This man has never forgotten. So often he remembers. Okay, stop. Sorry, I'm going to show you a problem. Yeah.